When the New Yorker magazine asked Mark Zuckerberg how he gets his news, he said the one news source he definitely follows is TechMeme. For more than 2 years and nearly 700 episodes, the TechMeme Ride Home has been Silicon Valley's favorite tech news podcast. The TechMeme Ride Home is a daily podcast, only 15 to 20 minutes long, and every day by 5 p.m. Eastern, it's all the latest tech news. But it's more than just headlines. You can get a robot to read your headlines. The TechMeme Ride Home is all the context around the latest news of the day. It's all the top stories, the top posts and tweets and conversations about those stories, as well as behind-the-scenes analysis. The TechMeme Ride Home is like TLDR as a service. The folks at TechMeme are online all day reading everything so they can catch you up. So listen to the one podcast anyone who's anyone in Silicon Valley listens to every single day. Search your podcast app now for Ride Home and subscribe to the TechMeme Ride Home podcast. I'm Jason Kander, and this is Majority 54, the podcast that helps the 54% who did not vote for Donald Trump talk to those of us who did about the most divisive issues in our country. And this week, we have a special guest co-host. It's my friend Jason Sudeikis. Everybody knows Jason Sudeikis from Saturday Night Live, Horrible Bosses, and We're the Millers, or as True would tell you, he's Red from Angry Birds. Jason co-created, writes, and stars in the new show Ted Lasso, which comes out this Friday, August 14th on Apple TV+. Thanks to a hookup from Jason, Diana and I had the pleasure of binging the entire first season this past week, and we absolutely loved it. It's our favorite Jason Sudeikis project ever, and we've seen most of them. I've long been a Jason Sudeikis fan, but over the past few years, he's become a good friend as well, and I really appreciate him fitting us into what is a super busy couple weeks for him promoting the new show. Jason, thanks for doing the show, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. And thank you for watching the whole show.
High five, Tree, you know, and no problem. No, people will get that joke in 2 days.
No, man, we
loved it. And we'll get into that more in a minute. But before we do the news of the week, which is usually what we do here at the top, we got to settle a little bet. And so last week, Ravi and I bet on who would be the running mate. He bet Susan Rice. He worked with Ambassador Rice. Natural bet for him to make. Would have been a great choice as well. I bet Kamala Harris. And I won. And as a result, Ravi has to eat my favorite snack, cottage cheese and hot sauce. And Ravi, out of solidarity, I brought my own cottage cheese and hot sauce. And I figured, since we got Jason here, and this is an audio format, he can narrate how this goes for you.
I don't know if I've ever had cottage cheese in my life, so it could go very poorly.
Your life's about to change.
I wonder if it's almost worth having a bite of it before you add the hot sauce. I've had cottage cheese, but the hot sauce is a whole new thing to me. Has this been a lifelong, Kander, has this been a lifelong thing, or is this more recent?
This is like over the last year, you know, that I've gotten to become that guy who cares about macros and stuff, and I'm like, ooh, this is a perfect mixture.
There you go. It's so good. Okay.
Here we go.
All right, here goes Ravi. Okay, innocent look on his face. Ooh, a little squinty. Like, what have I done? Why did I back the wrong horse? Now curious.
It's like Ted Lasso at the Indian restaurant.
It is a little bit like that. Again, another reference that people will get a little bit better in 2 days. Yeah, the spice doesn't bother you at all. It's more the texture. That's what I'm getting from that furrowed brow.
I'm well trained for this. The spice.
But that texture, yeah. So that's basically, I mean, what is cottage cheese? It's milk that stayed too long that someone very frugal was like, let's not toss this. Let's throw some pineapple and peaches and hot sauce in there and see what we can do.
100% what it is. It's God's gift.
I'll keep eating it, but I think we probably can move on and talk about some other things, Jason.
You liked it though, right? It's now a permanent part of your life, yes?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right. With that, Ravi, we are ready for the news of the week. Lay it on us.
Great. Well, there's a lot we can talk about this week. The VP search, the coronavirus vaccine progress, unemployment benefits debate. But I want to start with something near and dear to your heart, Kander, which is voting access. The New York Times released an analysis earlier in the week showing that a record 75% of Americans can vote by mail this year, which is way more than usual. And half of all Americans have access to no excuse mail-in voting. So this is a full-scale change to the way our country votes and counts its votes. And election officials in several key swing states have already asked that lawmakers give them more leeway to prepare absentee ballots for counting as they arrive rather than after the polls close. And in any normal circumstance, the president would be doing everything he could to ensure a safe, smooth and accurate election, but that's, of course, not what he's doing. In a Friday night news dump, Louis DeJoy, who's the Trump donor that serves as the Postmaster General, announced a massive restructuring of the Postal Service that consolidated his power, pushed aside 23 career Postal Service executives, and further politicized the Postal Service during an election that is going to be conducted largely by mail. So this announcement is in addition to a series of cost-cutting measures implemented by DeJoy that have delayed the delivery of mail, including ballots in recent primary elections. And DeJoy has floated a proposal to increase the price of postage for mail-in ballots from 20 to 55 cents in a bid to disrupt mail-in voting. In the same vein, the Postal Service warned that it won't prioritize the delivery of mail-in ballots unless states pay extra. And last week, Politico reported that Trump advisors were pondering, quote, possible executive actions he could take to curb mail-in voting, everything from directing the Postal Service to not deliver certain ballots to stopping local officials from counting them after Election Day. Kander, how serious is this?
It's pretty serious. A couple of thoughts on this. First, when this administration first began, the director of the census resigned, like within a couple. Ravi's taking a big drink of water to get that cut his cheese out right now.
He powered through that whole thing.
Yeah, he really did.
With little tiny swallows. It was impressive, Ravi. It really was.
Yeah. So, I remember when the administration first began, the director of the census resigned. And I remember, you know, I was running around doing politics and campaigning for people. And I remember reflecting, like in front of crowds, on how crazy things were that we even knew who the director of the census was, and we were freaked out that the director of the census resigned. And I think it says that a lot that now at the end of this term, we've gotten to a point where for the first time in probably 100 years, people know who the Postmaster General is. Like, that's how bad it is. Now, that's like the upsetting side. There are things that we can do to fight it. There's votefromhome2020.org that's helping send advance voting applications to swing state voters and then calling and texting them to remind them to vote well in advance. And you can also support Let America Vote's Safe Democracy Project, which includes pressuring members of Congress to add extra funding for mail-in voting to COVID relief bills. So that's a couple of items. So one, very cynical and upsetting. One, here's something you can do. With that, I would throw it to the other Jason to perhaps make us feel better. I don't know.
The expert, right?
No, yeah, the expert.
I wish I could necessarily make us feel better and be like, hey, this doesn't matter. I do believe that we're at a point where people are paying attention. That's the way I felt too about the administration. I was like, I haven't known this many people in administration since like the first two seasons of West Wing. It was like, and that was for good reason. This was for the opposite. But you know, and I know you and your little guy have gone through this recently. But Otis and I, you know, have been working our way. I've been, you know, starting at Phantom Menace and working through the, you know, the Star Wars. And this is, in my opinion, like some you know, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, Palpatine shit that you know, mm-hmm. they're, you know, perpetrating on folks. And it really feels like, yeah, a shot in the dark that is very, very, very cynical, very obvious, and yet attacks something that helps so many people in so many ways, whether it's, you know, birthday cards from your grandma to, you know, small businesses, that it's just so, so cynical. It breaks my heart. I didn't know that ballots were only 20 cents. How economical is that? Well, that's very affordable. Even 55 cents doesn't feel that bad, but when you're like, oh, that's a giant lead.
Yeah.
It's like, it's I got to find more three than 2X. Coins. I got to handle coins during a pandemic. Like, I don't know.
That's a good point.
You're not going to use your Apple Pay or you're not going to, you know, do Venmo 55 cents. That's like, you know, that's a dick move.
For people listening, Kander, I think a couple of weeks ago you were talking about how if you're healthy, probably time for us to tell healthy people to go to the polls, probably as a civic duty instead of mailing in their ballots. Do you stand by that advice?
Yeah, I would say not only that, if you're healthy, you know, plan to go and vote in person if you can, but also, and Stephanie said this last week, volunteer to be a poll worker because, you know, if we don't have enough poll workers, then they have a ready excuse to shut down polling locations. And that's just another way to make lines long and suppress the vote. I guess my somewhat closing thought on this for everybody, like from a mental health perspective, is that we have to focus on what we can actually control. And one of those things is encouraging people to vote in person if necessary, like I said, but also to get their mail-in ballot sent in as soon as they can. And you know, I mentioned a couple of things you can do on this issue specifically, but the best thing we can do is just overwhelm the system with eligible voters who are voting for Biden and Harris so that it's that much harder for them to mess this up for on purpose for us, them being the Trump administration. So, you know, focus on what you can control. I have like 50,000 people a day on social media like, but what if he doesn't leave office? But what if he messes with the mail? And I'm like, what are you going to do about that? Like, we'll jump off that bridge when we come to it. Like, in the meantime, let's win this election.
Yeah, you got to win it first in order for that, you know, next phase to hit. You know,
exactly.
Before we face that final boss of this psychopathic video game.
Yeah, we can't have a lightsaber battle with Palpatine until we expose him as the Emperor.
Yeah, otherwise we just look like a jerk.
That's right.
We just look like we're picking on an old man.
That's right. You
know? Spoilers. Sorry, gang, spoilers. for being...
We have a segment we call Quarantine Corner where we share something from our week, whether it's a book we read, a movie we watched, etc. And both Kander and I got a chance to check out your incredible show.
Oi, mate, this is you.
I believe it is.
Wicked. You coaching football. You are a legend for doing something so stupid. I mean, it's mental. They're going to murder you.
This is a bit of news from the other side of the Atlantic. AFC Richmond announced the hiring of their new manager, American football coach Ted Lasso.
You're an American who's now in charge of a football club, despite possessing very little knowledge of the game.
Oh! I know that AFC Richmond is going to give you everything they got, win or lose.
Or tie.
Right, y'all do ties here.
You want to talk a little bit about it and when folks can view it?
Yeah, so it comes out tomorrow, August 14th. Yeah, it's on Apple TV Plus, which I think everybody gets like a free year of on their, you know, iPhone, iPad, if you have an Apple product, Apple TV, any of that stuff. If you've watched The Morning Show with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, then you probably just got to scroll to the right and you'll see my goofy face. But yeah, I mean, the show is about a small time college football coach from Kansas. We have him, you know, having coached at Wichita State, who does not have a football team and hasn't in a few decades, which made it easier to make them, you know, a team silly enough to have me as their head coach, who gets hired to coach a professional soccer team in London, England, in the English Premier League, which is basically like the, you know, the NFL, the NBA of soccer there. And yeah, he's a fish out of water, and you know, he's being thrown into the deep end in that water, and he's in deep water, and he's also a fish out of water. So it's multi-layered, a lot of layers going on here. And it's just, you know, 10 episodes. The way we went about it is like, we're trying to make a 300-minute long, you know, sports film, you know, of that ilk that, you know, I assume, you know, all of us around the same age grew up with, you know, Major League, you know, Bull Durham, you know, even things like Rudy or Invincible, like just those great kind of stories. But you don't have to care about the sport. I think the show is as much about soccer as Rocky is about boxing, you know. So,
well, I'm going to talk about it for a second because you're by nature very modest, which is why this is probably the most uncomfortable part of the whole podcast for you, which
it's
is talking about. Yeah. So I'm going to talk about it for a second. We loved it. Look, some of your best known characters, and you and I have talked about this in the past, have been guys whose humor expertly flirts with the line between charm and arrogance. And you do that so well. And even though this character has an unmistakable Midwestern charm, Ted also has the other parts of you that Diana and I love so much. He's intelligent, he's earnest, he's generous, he's kind. And, you know, at the risk of making this overly sappy, like, we watched this and felt in a way that was like really similar to how we feel. We talked about this, like how we feel after we hang out with you. Like, we just felt
it's very sweet,
full, you know, and being around somebody who's really funny, but also leaves you with this warm feeling. It's a great show about so many things, but it's especially a great show about coaching, to the point where Diana has said she wants to use it like in her presentations and in her speaking stuff that she does for groups.
High praise.
Yeah. And so you played basketball in high school and college. So I was wondering if it's based on a coach that you had.
Not exactly. It's based on a bunch of things, you know, because coaches are just like a great teacher, a great mentor, a great partner, you know, whether it be romantic or platonic, but just someone that I've always sort of looked at as someone that sees something in you, sees more in you than you can see in yourself at that point. Because I think often, you know, our personal baggage, especially as we get older and accumulate more and more, even though it might be nicer luggage, it's still baggage, you know, that can cloud our intuition and the way we view certainly the world, but then also the way we view ourselves in the world. And so, you know, for a great example that isn't necessarily a coach, but one that people know is like Tina Fey. Tina Fey was someone that when I got hired as a writer at Saturday Night Live, told me, like, hey, if you can improvise, you can write. And she knew I had a knack for doing improv. So she came in there as like a, you know, an actor from Second City main stage, and we write our own stuff for ourselves. But then she got hired to write for other people. And that's a little bit of a mind hump. Is that an appropriate way to put it?
Sure.
And she, you know, just again was like, no, you can do this. You can do this. And Lauren was the same way. But I had that in high school too. My high school basketball coach, a fellow named Donnie Campbell, who ended up having a really, you know, successful career at Blue Valley Northwest after Shawnee Mission West. We had a camp in between, right before junior year, and I transferred from Rockhurst to, you know, all boys Jesuit school in KCMO to Shawnee Mission West, a public school. And he was a new coach, so it was like starting fresh with this place as a junior. And I remember him saying that after this week practice that we had, it was like, there's no reason you can't be the best point guard in this league. And I remember writing that down on a strip of paper and hanging it above my door. And I don't think I achieved that, but it at least, any bit of me that would hold myself back or want to do something on behalf of someone else, as a guy who I don't think who has never been in a bar fight, but would fight someone if they insulted like a friend or a family member or like my gal, that it felt like I was being called to do more and try harder and be the best version of myself by someone that saw that in me. And so, you know, Coach Campbell was one of those people. You know, a lot of it was kind of like, what if Bill Self met John Wooden? Like, you know, John Wooden, the great UCLA coach, who has a tremendous philosophy. I mean, people know his pyramid of success, and it's taught in business. And that's the thing I used to teach when coaching improv in Chicago, because I just found the two cornerstones of enthusiasm and industriousness, just hard work, to be objectively outstanding things to bring into any endeavor you do in life. And I don't care if it's, you know, running for office or racing go-karts. If you have those two things, people are going to want to kick it with you, you know, well, hang out.
And the show makes that point by, like, it starts with the absurd premise of a football coach, an American football coach, becoming a football coach, and demonstrates that, well, you know, coaching is coaching.
And leadership has many different ways. It doesn't all have to be like Michael Jordan in The Last Dance. It doesn't have to be a guy motivating through, you know, fear and intimidation. I'm not saying necessarily Michael did that, but because he certainly walked the walk too. I think that's the most impressive thing, that he was always in, always, you know, winning the suicide races in practice.
I like your Michael Jordan was a tyrant take. I think
I don't think I'm alone there. You know, we did not hear much from Luke Longley in the Last Dance.
Did we?
What's crazy, the one thing I do want to say about this in regards to like what we were talking about for the first few minutes of this, is that I believe that a dangerous combination and the worst cocktail of a human male is one that is ignorant with arrogance. That combo has, you know, been played comedically and dramatically for a while, you know, in great ways. And I just felt like Ted is, you know, ignorant but curious. Mm-hmm. And the importance of curiosity and empathy and active listening and restorative justice. And there's elements to that throughout this show that inform that show that were all existed long before Trump was, you know, president. Because the crazy thing was, the whole idea for the show is a big high concept premise that we really took careful reasoning of how we can make this justify it as a premise, like where it could be believable. Because the jagged little pill you had to accept in 2015 was this question: was, wait, I don't know, Jason, how can someone who has no idea what they're doing be in charge of something as important as a professional soccer team?
Yeah.
You know, no one asked that question now. No one brings that up. Everybody's just like, oh, I get it. Yeah, this is great. Yeah, okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, lo and behold.
Well, one thing, you know, it's a hilarious show, but I think the real core of it is the idealism of this coach and his outlook, which I think is actually super substantive and something I think a lot of people can learn from in a world that feels kind of cynical right now.
I think so. You know, Cannon and I talk about a lot, and he talks a lot about using your platform, and I'm not active on social media. And I think that comes from a little bit of when all that started kicking off. You know, I had a weekly platform on SNL, you know, I didn't feel this call to, you know, also put myself out there that way. And nor did a lot of people from my generation. But this show has a lot of, you know, a lot of my beliefs.
That actually segues really nicely into a segment that we call Unsolicited Campaign Advice. You and I met right before I started to become more well-known. And you've given me a lot of great advice about navigating that change in my life. And then through our friendship, I feel like I've sort of had the chance to see up close and personal a celebrity figuring out how to go about using their platform to occasionally talk about politics. So what do you feel like you've learned first from Olivia's example, because she's very active, obviously, and has been for a while, and the second from your own experience over the last few years about the opportunities and then the potential missteps of somebody in your position becoming more outspoken?
I had a very neat opportunity to see the highs and lows of fame with my Uncle George. It was George Wayne, played Norm on Cheers. So I got to view it as like a little kid. I saw, you know, people be excited to meet him, but then also call him by his wrong name, calling him Norm, you know, and how, depending on how he was feeling, how that feels, you know, especially when he's, you know, back home in Chicago or what have you. You know, and with Olivia, one of the things, again, not being on social media, when we first started doing it, what I loved about it is that similar is one of the themes of the Ted Lasso show is like, you know, people get put in boxes. Men get put in boxes. Women get put in boxes. Women that are pretty get put in boxes. And, you know, so people thought Olivia Wilde was this. And then I got to know Olivia Wilde as Olivia. Then I got to see that her personality really came across in her social media. And it wasn't just her, you know, how funny she is and how smart she is, but also how passionate she is about activism. And I think you gotta be authentic. That's the thing, you know, that me, Jason and I talk a lot about is that this feels a little cynical and glib, but authenticity has become a currency, the same way that shamelessness has. You know, I think it's the, you know, the force in the dark side right there for you. Like to be shameless, and you can just keep, you know, moving your target of who you want to hang out with. You know, me, I prefer when leaving the room, people say kind things like, you know, you and Diana do evidently about me versus just the theory of like, hey, at least they're talking about me, you know, and that's what we have, you know, at the top of the mountain right now as our country. My advice to people is to, it's a little bit, I'm going to butcher the Mark Twain quote, but every, you know, every person is living a comedy, tragedy, and a drama. People need to listen to people and celebrate like the gray area of why someone might have made that choice. Because we're not going to get the end of The Music Man where Harold Hill, you know, this con man, you know, comes around and has a heart of gold and falls with the you know, his heart was too open to Winthrop and, you know, Marion the librarian. This guy's not going to do that. He's just a straight up con man. And so my heart breaks for people that are tricked by him and fooled by him. And I want people that know better to understand that the people that might have fallen into that category in 2016 and might even be, you know, teetering that way in 2020, to know that they're doing that for a deeper reason, and to just shame them is not as healing as you might think. That was the insidious part of deplorables. I think a lot of people in America, unfortunately, you know, feel they are deplorable. Everybody knew who she was talking about, and then they co-opted it to take advantage of people that feel like they haven't lived up to their potential or something, you know, and that's one piece of the pie.
No, I think what you're really landing on is that if you're going to, as a celebrity, as somebody who may be now living on the coast or experiencing life differently than the average person, if you are going to speak up and be active, you have to work extra hard to maintain your roots and to maintain a connection to what life was like before that, in order to be authentic and be able to speak to people. I
think absolutely. That's a guy who does this. That's someone that knows what they're doing when you can be concise. That's a guy that, you know, shows up on, you know, the different shows, boom, face in a square, nails it, you know? Yeah. I was just, you know, rambling, yeah, but you know.
But to be fair, I sometimes call you for a joke before I go.
Sure. And then you punch it up and make it better. And I still feel, you know, pretty darn cool.
That's nice of you to say. Today's episode of Majority 54 is brought to you by SimpliSafe. We're all spending a lot of time at home. Sometimes Ravi is at home doing nothing, and I want to know that Ravi is safe during that time.
And listeners, you'll understand the context of that joke later on in this episode.
When it comes to home security companies, most trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, and lousy customer support. So there's really only one no-brainer, and that's SimpliSafe.
SimpliSafe has everything you need to protect your home without the drawbacks of traditional home security. There's no contract, no pushy sales guys, no hidden fees, no fine print.
It's got an arsenal of sensors and cameras, an arsenal, and it can blanket every room, window, and door, and you can tailor it specifically for your home, and it's social distancing friendly because you can set it up yourself in under an hour. There's no technician necessary. To go back to this Arsenal thing, for real, like, we use this and it really is like an interlocking fields of fire, to steal an overly violent military term. And it really does work really well.
Yeah, U.S. News and World Report named it best overall home security in 2020. And all of this starts at just $15 a month. So try Simply Safe today at simplysafe.com/majority54. You get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. There's simply nothing to lose. That's Simply, S-I-M-P-L-I with an I, simplysafe.com/majority54.
This is a historic week. Kamala Harris was named Joe Biden's running mate, has a great chance to become our first woman vice president. And in celebration of the 100th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, the United State of Women is honoring its complicated legacy with a week of action. While women won the right to vote in August of 1920, activists have been fighting for a century to make sure that includes all women. With Michelle Obama's When We All Vote, the United State of Women is hosting the When All Women Vote Week of Action. This week, virtual events and actions will examine the disenfranchisement of Black and Brown communities and celebrate the women of color who have continued fighting to make the 19th Amendment's promise a reality. United State of Women is calling on women like you to take action now by pledging to join the Week of Action and stand in solidarity with the full protection of voting rights for all women. Take the pledge at bit.ly/allwomenvote.
All right, today, because we have a segment we call This Week in Misinformation, where we present either a meme, an article, a talking point, or a video from the right, and we dissect it, talk about what's true, what's not, and most importantly, how people at their kitchen table talk to people who have different beliefs from them about it. And so this week, we're going to tackle the right wing's nascent attacks on Kamala Harris. So when the Harris pick was announced, President Trump wasted no time in going on the attack, posting the following video within minutes of the announcement.
Kamala Harris ran for president by rushing to the radical left, embracing Bernie's plan for socialized medicine, calling for trillions in new taxes, attacking Joe Biden for racist policies. Voters rejected Harris. They smartly spotted a phony. But not Joe Biden. He's not that smart. Biden calls himself a transition candidate. He is handing over the reins to Kamala while they jointly embrace the radical left. Slow Joe and phony Kamala. Perfect together. Wrong for America.
All right. So they're painting Joe now as the transition candidate, which is something I think that's relatively new. So they're basically saying, don't worry about him. Worry about who's coming after him. And then they're pushing this radical left agenda on Kamala, which obviously they have not been able to make stick with Joe Biden. What should we make of this line of attack?
First of all, I'm like, wow, they're trying to do a lot in this ad. They're like, let's make him seem like, you know, feckless, and then let's make her seem radical. And, you know, we just listened to the audio of the ad, but I imagine that there's a fair amount of images of her that try to make sure everybody understands that she's Black. I'm sure that that's what they're doing. So look, I think that you just, if somebody brings up this attack, the idea of like, she and he are now vessels for the radical left, I think just dive into that and be like, okay, so which leftist policies are you having a problem with? Because like we're winning on most of these arguments. So I think just go straight for it.
It's interesting. Also, Slow Joe's new too. You know, Sleepy Joe, Slow Joe. They both sound like great, you know, blues guitarists. Neither one of them are going to work. You know, Sleepy Joe, that sounds like, you know, a guy, point guard for the Globetrotters. Like, here comes, you know, Sleepy Joe Biden. Oh, and he, you know, goes through the legs, you know, like, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, even Trump's quotes this morning, you know, the outright use of quotes, you know, with, you know, suburban housewives. It's like, wait, why are you quoting that? Like, is that because it means something else?
Like, that guy should really figure out how quotations work, right? Like, I mean, I hope maybe in his post-presidency, that's a project, like painting.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. He can do it on a prison wall, you know, with the little hashes. No, I'm sure he's totally innocent.
The slow thing I find really interesting, and just like the Sleepy Joe thing, it's like, it's just not that scary. And you could just tell that they're struggling to define Joe Biden in a way that's really going to scare people. And so
he's not scary. I mean, you know, like, that's not in the way that we know real scary now. You know, it's all relative, and it's fascinating.
You know why he's not scary? He's not scary because there are so many voters who I met in 2016 who would say to me, well, I can't vote for Hillary. I mean, if Obama were running again, okay, I could do that. And if they don't say that, they go, I mean, if Biden had run. And so now I'm at the point where if somebody says to me, like if they go, well, I don't know, I think maybe he doesn't have all his faculties or whatever. Like if they're making that kind of a distinction, if that's their objection, then I'm going, OK, so this was about like racism and sexism all along. Right. Because if you are now just coming up with bogus reasons not to vote for him, like you just didn't want to vote for the Democrat. He's been the person who people have been saying like, no, well, I could have gone with him for 4 years. And so now they have to invent something else.
Yeah. I mean, hence the post office, you know, yeah. or just any type of misinformation. I have a private Facebook account, and a lot of it's from folks back home. And it's really something dealing with this misinformation and the way that we really got, you know, caught off guard, everybody on left and right. Like we're all, you know, vulnerable to it. That's the tricky thing, and it can happen in any way. It's the insidious part of the whole notion of fake news, is that some of it is fake and purposefully so, in a way that is very, very damaging. And so yeah, I see friends, you know, whatever it's about, whether it's about coronavirus or you know, people's agendas, and people are, you know, if people write at the top of their thing, go ahead and fact check this. Like that clears it for me. It's like, oh, wow, well, if they were going to tell me that I can fact check this, then this must all be true. It's like all these, you know, silly little tricks that I feel like teenage me used to, you know, get out of, you know, bad report cards and borrowing the car, you know, when on weekends when I didn't ask for it ahead of time, and whatever, you know, line of salesmanship, you know, a clever teenager might have. It feels like the same kind of stuff. And yet it works.
Just for the mission of the podcast, for those people who are just trying to deal with people pushing back against the Harris nomination already, a couple of quick things. Obviously, we don't know everything about what they're going to throw at her. But number one is they're going to try to make this more about her than about Joe Biden, which is not necessarily a bad thing because I think she's very impressive. But to the extent that she has a more left record than Biden, which is true, what you will see over the course of the next few weeks undoubtedly is that her positions will become Joe Biden's positions. That's basically what happens when you run as vice president. And that's something that I'm sure they agreed to beforehand. So there are going to be all these clips from debates of the past where, forget the ones where she attacked Biden, which we could talk about in a further podcast, but where she has a more expansive view of healthcare reform. She has a more liberal view of things happening at the border and whether it's a crime to cross the border or not, and all these things. And they're going to try to make a lot out of these positions. But one thing you need to look for is, what is she saying now that she's on the ticket, and what becomes the policy positions of the ticket? And undoubtedly, you're going to see her positions become Biden's positions, because that's just what happens when you run as vice president. You become secondary in terms of decision making on the agenda.
I think when someone does change from one point of view to another, it's good to show the emotional like work, like the way you had to show your work back with long division, you know, as a kid, just so they knew you weren't just stealing answers from the back of the book or something. I think, you know, having those things line up and be like, yes, they said this, but, you know, here's how they feel now and here's how they got there. And I think it's important for candidates to articulate that too. I mean, as concisely as possible, because I know that it can be a rather complicated journey, but sometimes when it is just humanized to their own personal take on it, like whether they've, you know, met someone that was dealing with something that maybe they had policy they were leaning towards, you know, against, and then they met someone that changed their mind and they can personify it and, you know, humanize it. I think that's also helpful from their side of things. And I think it could be helpful for folks that are trying to articulate, you know, what's real and what isn't, you know, to people in their, you know, their office or, as you're saying, across the table.
Well, it's a good point, and it's actually advice that we can all take. Like when we're dealing with people and they're saying something, we can say, well, you know, I actually used to think something similar to that. Here's how I got to where
I feel. Yeah, 100%.
Which I think you're right, is a very effective strategy.
Today, because I used to be a school principal, and so every week we used to give out awards to our students to incentivize the right kind of behavior. And so we'd be remiss if we don't give out awards here on Majority 54. And so what we do is we single out Above and Beyond Behavior from the GOP. One award we give out every week is called the Lindsey Graham Total Capitulation and Submissal Award. And so this is reserved for a Republican politician who knows better, but is playing the part out of cynical calculation. Kander, what do we have this week?
Well, given your work on Ted Lasso, we could not pass up a tweet from Marco Rubio about college football, and I'll read it here. So Rubio tweeted, "Even before COVID-19, many of those pushing to cancel college football have spent years trying to kill youth and high school football as a way to end the game. They have no interest in getting to yes or in an honest cost-benefit analysis of playing versus not playing." I'll just comment on this first. I would just like to say that there's barely any time to wage war on college football when we're really busy with this war on Christmas. I mean, it takes up yeah. a lot of time. But in reality, like if this somehow becomes, which I could see where it would become a debate for people since everything gets pulled into the political vacuum and this is something that people care about a lot, I just think there's a very practical point to make here, which is baseball is barely hanging on because they didn't do a bubble. And none of those players have to go to classes on a campus. So,
isn't this just sort of, you know, they have a great deal of money in the bank. They get paid for a living. You know, they can afford, you know, all the hand sanitizer they want, you know.
They can bubble themselves.
Yeah. That's a giant distinction between pros and amateurs, which is a whole separate podcast.
No, but like this is the kind of thing I can totally see becoming a wedge political issue where, you know, in Kansas City or a place like that. Like, where people are like, damn it, the Democrats canceled football. So I can see what Rubio is trying to do here, Robbie.
I want to know who they're talking about because, you know, we're Democrats and you can't get us to stop talking about how much we love football. So like, yes, I'm sure there are people in Marin County or whatever who want to end football. And you know what? They have some good arguments. They have good arguments. Like football is really bad for your brain, but we as a society, me included, and I played football, have decided that we allow people to take those risks. And most people I know who are Democrats are not looking to cancel that football. And you know what? Most of the people who made this decision are not Democrats, but the decision affects a lot of people who are players of color who need to be protected. But who's responsible for this? Is it liberals or is it the president of the United States who can't get a handle on this virus?
I mean, he's trying to cancel it because people won't stand up for the flag. So
yeah, right. Yeah, that's a good reason. Right, that's a good reason to cancel it, but not a deadly pandemic.
Yeah, that's the situation with the shotgun blast strategy of like the administration, where they keep throwing things at the wall to see, you know, what sticks, you know, and when that happens, then you have like 9 different things going on, and they show up like in that ad that you played earlier, where it's like, okay, one of these is going to work, and it's going to work for 4% of the piece of pie, and then this is going to work for 2%. It's just very piecemeal, but yeah, they kind of, you know, human centipede their own, they end up eating their own ideas' ass, at some point.
Well, that's the episode title.
There we go.
Well, I'm often wondering, because we look at a lot of Rubio tweets on this podcast. I'm often left wondering who he's debating with. It almost reminds me of The Beautiful Mind, where by a certain point in the movie, you realize that he's talking to himself. He's like shadow boxing, whether it's this or these biblical tweets that he always sends out that kind of sometimes can be a subtweet to the president. Sometimes you're not quite sure. You almost think that Marco Rubio is debating himself. I don't know many people who espouse most of these beliefs that he's arguing against on his Twitter.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, he's arguing the better version of himself. He's arguing.
Yeah.
And the part that's more, you know, open minded and sort of understands things, and the part that he wants to be.
He's shutting that guy right down. He's like, you stop it. It's not going to work. So we're also going to give out a Kellyanne Conway Alternative Facts Award. So who can we recognize this week, Robbie?
Yeah, we'll do this one really fast. There's nothing truly unique about this, but it's just worth pointing out that the chief law enforcement official in our country, Bill Barr, went on Fox News a couple days ago and said some things that were notable. Here's just one quote from this interview. He said,
"Nowadays you have, I think the left has essentially withdrawn and really represents a Rousseauian revolutionary party that believes in tearing down the system, that what's wrong about America today all has to do with the institutions we have, and we have to tear them down. And they're interested in complete political victory. They're not interested in compromise. They're not interested in dialectic exchange of views. They're interested in total victory. And it's a secular religion. It's a substitute for a religion. They view their political opponents and they, as evil, that because we stand in the way of their progressive utopia that they're trying to reach."
Kander, you often talk about the sort of playground politics of this. This feels like a little bit, I know you are, but what am I? What do you read into this quote?
I hope that they trot out this poor man's Dick Cheney every week. I mean, let me tell you how persuasive it is to persuadable voters when they hear sick burns like undermining classical liberal values and Rousseauian revolution. I mean, what political world is this guy living in, right? I mean, that's not the one we're in right now. But what I like about this is he did accuse the left of wanting to, quote, tear down the system. And I think if anybody brings that up with you, you just embrace the hell out of it. I mean, you proceed to talk about the fact that everything costs a lot and only the rich are seeing their pay go up. So be like, you happy with this system? I ain't happy with this system.
Wasn't that the whole idea? They were going to drain the swamp. Wasn't that, you know, 4 years ago?
Right.
You know, it was an effective thing. You know, obviously a whole bunch of folks voted for that. But we're trying to tear down this swamp, you know, trying to like drain the swamp that's gotten a little swampier, you know, a few more bugs, bigger flies. They fly by your ear. You think it's like a hawk. It's like, no, that's a fly. Like, Lordy. But I think
murder hornets.
That's right.
Literally.
I mean,
murder
there you
hornets.
Go. There you go. Washington football team. There's a perfect new name for you. The murder hornets. Well, that was easy. I love that they still haven't thought one up. It's only been, you know, going on for 30 years, that debate. But I know Barr has, without the accent, Barr has like a real, like, you know, Lotso hugging bear energy, you know, from Toy Story 3, where it's just like, I don't know about this guy.
Family man, huh? I understand. Put him back in the timeout chair.
Kind of like a small, thin voice and such a big round face. I'm just like, I don't buy it.
Well, that brings us to another segment we call Midlife Crisis Corner. And this is where we share some tips about fitness, sleep, nutrition, sanity, et cetera. Sadiq is not saying anything about where you are in your life, which is my standard disclaimer in this segment. It's a recurring segment.
He makes sure to tell every guest this is a recurring segment. I'll be short. I realized this week that I miss playing team sports. Like, I like running and lifting and doing the Murph and all that, but I really want to go play basketball and baseball or maybe like flag football. But the dilemma of being, you know, 39 years old is that those are the sports where you tear things, break things. So I'm hesitant. I just keep inching closer and closer to being like, yeah, I'm going to go play basketball, you know, and then I'm like, oh man, if I get hurt, I'm not going to be able to work out for like 6 months. Anyway, that's my midlife crisis dilemma of the moment.
The last basketball game I played was last summer. And it was a 2-on-2 game. 3 out of 4 of us were out of commission for at least a month after one basketball game.
It's a young man's game.
It really is. And then I always found that I got hurt the most when playing basketball, when I played the one extra game where I was like tired. Everybody's like, come on, run one more. So that's a little bit of, you know, Murphy's Law or just karma. You know, I agree with you about team sports and just, you know, I mean, so much of my professional life is, you know, has been based around ensemble and teams, you know, whether it be improv or sketch. That a big thing that's been very, very helpful to me has been playing FIFA soccer, you know, online with buddies from the show, like writers and actors, you know, some guys in London.
Oh, wow.
We all, you know, play FIFA and we're on the same team. We created our team from the show and the players that look like them and everything. And so we're all on there. And so when you, you know, string together, you know, 9 passes, you know, on a break or something like that, it's thrilling. And then our buddy Mo just figured out how to do 30-second highlights of goals. And so you do get that, like, you know, that the energy of the high five or the that point that, you know, LeBron will give to, you know, Anthony Davis, you know, someone, you know, after a good pass, you'll sort of have that energy, even though it's in a virtual sense. But that's been very soothing through all this. And one that Olivia's been very, very kind and respectful of, because she can tell there's a great deal of joy, you know, coming out of it. And I know that because she often shuts that door right there when I'm being too loud, when I'm being too joyful. That's the one right there. She'll just come in and go, it's loud.
Mine is very short too. I actually took a day off this week on Monday, and instead of doing what I normally do on a day off, which is pack it with other things to do, I actually deliberately did nothing for most of the day and just walked around Lower Manhattan and just kind of noted what I was seeing. And it's, you know, New York is a really fascinating place right now. And as somebody who grew up here, you just see things on the street that you wouldn't normally see. And I just was taking notes and just kind of soaking it all in. It felt good to do nothing for a day. And I felt recharged heading into this week.
Jason, if it hasn't become obvious already, Ravi doesn't have kids.
Oh, yeah. Clear as day, yeah. Do nothing. Last time I did nothing was when, like, on an airplane that I was flying alone. That was like, those are spa days now. I can't wait to fly again. Not flying with a kid is like, this is great. This is like Club Med. I can do this any day. I'll fly, you know, 9-hour flight. What, we got delayed? Do I have Wi-Fi? I don't give a shit. That's great. I'm fine, you know.
Man, that's me at the grocery store right now. I'm like, oh my God, I got 20 minutes to listen to a podcast.
Maybe one more lap through the cereal aisle.
Yeah.
Someday somebody's going to do a super cut of every one of these that I've done where I talk about like learning Italian and stuff like that, where it's just your face, Candor, as I'm telling
just
all
me,
these
like,
stories.
Yeah.
Just that's you right. Getting more and more pissed at me.
And then I'm like, I discovered cottage cheese. Like,
I accidentally spilled some hot sauce in it, and I think I invented something.
Diana says it's okay. You know.
So, Candor, please rescue me from this and give us our...
I love that for some reason Midlife Crisis Corner has just become Spike the Ball on Robbie every week. I don't know why. There's no good reason. It's just, I don't know. You don't even deserve it. Anyway, life is hard.
Yeah. So we have this segment called Grab an Oar where we just end with action. And I'll start with something really quick in the arena world and then pass to you today, because we are partnering at Arena with the convention and the Biden campaign to do what's called Campaign Academy 2020. And it's basically a free opportunity for those of you who are out there sitting at home trying to figure out how you can help move our democracy forward over the next few months without going to the doors. And so the Academy is from August 17th to 20th, and you can sign up at training.win. It's training.win, and we hope to see you there.
Two charity events and organizations that I'm, you know, a part of. One is called Steps of Faith, where we help provide, you know, arms and legs to people that need them without costing an arm and a leg. And that's something we're checking out, stepsoffaith.org. And then bigslickkc.org is a charity endeavor that I do with friends back home in Kansas City as well, that we help Children's Mercy Hospital, which is an incredible place, facility, and incredible staff that I mean, literally do science-based miracles on a minute-by-minute basis, and a tremendous place to put any extra dough you have there that's not going to other places that certainly need it in this time. Those would be two things I'd recommend.
Absolutely. And before I do the closeout, I'll just say thanks, man.
Oh, absolutely.
It was really fun, and I appreciate it.
You know, you guys know a lot more about this stuff than I do, so it's fun to, you know, even just try to keep up with y'all.
No, but don't sell yourself short. I get some of the more thought-provoking texts about politics from you. So I appreciate you doing it. It was fun. And I'm gonna plug your show one last time. So Ted Lasso comes out Friday, August 14th on Apple TV Plus. It really is tremendous. It is a really welcome thing in this moment of cynicism to have something that is clever and funny and deep, but also makes you feel good about the world. And you can follow the show on Twitter. It's at Ted Lasso. If you want to catch a glimpse of Jason Sudeikis on social media, I suggest following Olivia Wilde. Ravi is Ravi M. Gupta on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Jason Candor on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And our show is at Majority54 on Twitter. Remember, we all have a platform. Make sure to use yours today. Majority 54 is a Wonder Media Network production. It's produced by Grace Lynch and Edie Allard. Theme music provided by Kimmett Coleman. Special thanks to Diana Candor.
And you still rocking that mohawk?
Oh, shit. Yeah, I forgot.
Forgot to share it with the people. I mean, look at that. Look at that.
Diana did a hell of a job. I look just like
that. It really is. That's well shaped.
I kind of want to keep it. I think I have basically, with the process of my hairline, I think I have another 18 months where I can kind of pull this off. And then after that, there ain't going to be no mohawks.
Yeah. Well, it depends. All depends what happens in November.